20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Happy Monday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL, and of course, the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us today. I am joined by two wonderful individuals, the first of which you can find on Packers on SI, the one and only Jacob Westendorf. You can find him on social media as well, at Jacob Westendorf. Jacob, how you doing, my friend?
Green and golden to go off of this morning's gold medal experience as a hockey fan once every 4 years. That was I read a tweet that Sam Decker retweeted that said, like, on Wednesday, I'll try and watch the NHL, and at halftime, I'll throw, or the first intermission, I'll throw my television out the window or whatever. That's me. So with apologies to Janelle Mackey and all of our big time hockey fans, I can only stomach it every 4 years. Unfortunately, I try. I just can't.
I appreciate it. We'll get into that in a second. And then, of course, we've got the one and only Grant Bills. So you can find him on the Wisco Sports Show and then on social media at Wisco Grant. Grant, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. An excellent weekend. The hockey's been my favorite part of the Olympics, too. So to see that culminate in the gold medal match was excellent. I'm not a hockey expert, but it's fun to kind of buy in for a couple weeks. The Four Nations was awesome, too, like 2 years ago. I love how we kind of had that. We had a little bit of previous history built already.
And just a year ago for Four Nations, not two, just a year ago.
It was last year. You're right. So was in the Olympics, you get every four. So,
and not the last one, but the one before that, Canada beat us in the gold medal game, right? That was Sidney Crosby.
Yep. Yeah. And, yes, I believe that was, it's been crazy. I wanted to touch on that actually, not long, because again, we're a Packer show and a football show, not a hockey show, but, me personally, I love international hockey. The hockey is pretty much the only thing I tune into in Winter Olympics. And it's my favorite Olympics, anything, regardless of whether it's summer or winter. I loved the Four Nations a year ago. And then when you get like the what's the other one, the World Games or Hockey Cup or World Cup, I don't know what it is for the other one, but there's those two. And just anytime you get international, and when I know Russia wasn't in this one, but you can get, Russia and Slovakia and US and Canada, of course, it's amazing. And it was an unbelievable tournament, both on the men's and the women's. Came down to Canada and US in both games were absolutely epic. Two unbelievable goals to win on both, just as good as it gets. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I will do the same thing where I'll try to tune into hockey this week now and be all excited for it. And I will also not probably make it through a game, but I do love playoff hockey. So the first round of when you get right around the same time where you get NBA basketball opening round of the playoffs and NHL opening round, and you've got like three or four games going. It's not quite the beauty of opening weekend March Madness where you've got four awesome games going or whatever, but it's not too far off. And that's when I start getting really into it.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. I enjoy the basketball. And not only that, it's usually like basketball, hockey, and the NFL draft are usually like kind of all in one. So between picks for the Packers or whatever, you have something to pay attention to and regular season baseball starting. And I think we're going to have to get into hockey or something, because if you're into baseball, I don't know how much baseball is going to be played by April of 2027. So
2027 might be a good year to get in hockey and basketball and everything else.
Yeah, yes.
We'll see. That's going to be its own, ball of wax, I guess. But yeah, thankfully we're not a baseball podcast, and Grant can deal with all of that on the Wisco Sports Show when we get to 2027 lockout and strike and everything else.
It's already starting. Like, I've had some baseball guests on, and the MLB, union head, the Players Association guy, stepped down, and we're talking about what does it mean for next year. I'm like, whoa. Like, trust me, I did sports talk radio in 2020 when we didn't have baseball. Like, there will be time to talk about the not having baseball. Like, if there's a lockout, we can save the lockout talk for when the lockout actually happens.
I was gonna say, nothing like ruining the last bit of baseball before a lockout by looking forward to the lockout. Just enjoy this while we got it, and then we'll figure that out later. All right, that's enough hockey, baseball, basketball talk. Let's talk some Green Bay Packers. We're gonna be doing some bold offseason predictions. I've done these for years now, usually on a Monday episode, usually either with, in the past, Alex and Perry, or Grant and Perry, or today Jacob gets to play the role of Perry Goldstein and Grant is back. But I did look back a year ago. Do you want to hear my bold predictions, bold offseason predictions from a year ago?
Yes. What's the point of being organized and being able to look up such things if we don't go back to it? Yes,
this is absolutely true. All right. So it's fun because it was February.
I remember one. Can I guess?
Yeah,
I remember one. Did you predict they'd trade for Max Crosby?
I did. I did predict that. Okay. So we'll go over that. So the other crazy thing is we did it on February 16th last year. It was Grant and I who did. I actually think we did it for the radio show. I don't actually know if we, I think we did for the podcast too, but my notes were from the radio show. But it was the open of that one was the Hockey Four Nations, which is why I remember it was a year ago, because we were talking the Hockey Four Nations, first of all, and what was going on with that. And then we transitioned into bold predictions. So we're just 1 year later, we opened with hockey today and we're going with bold predictions again. So here are my bold predictions. I had 13 of them that I had personally. Grant actually had wide receiver in round one. So that ended up coming to fruition. And he said the new quarterback's coach would be a benefit to Jordan Love. So he kind of went 2 for 2, I would say. So nice job, Grant. Mine, my whole list of them, I said I had that Jordan Morgan and Marshawn Lloyd will be the biggest offseason noise of the returning Packers. Not quite. Lloyd definitely made noise in the offseason, but I don't think either of them got to the point of being anywhere near the biggest. And yeah, so that was a wrong. I said Green Bay will draft a quarterback. That's 0 for 2. The Packers will outright release Jaire Alexander. I caught so much flack for that. That ended up actually being right. And then I said the Packers will find a trade for Max Crosby. So close. Right position, right trade, wrong player. They ended up getting, and right first letter of the first name with Max, but it ended up being Micah instead. The Packers will trade out one Slayton for another. I thought they were going to sign Darius Slayton, get rid of TJ Slayton. They did get rid of TJ Slayton. They obviously did not sign Darius Slayton. I said Green Bay will draft 5 linemen on either side of the ball. That did not come to fruition. Packers will sign Paulson Adebo. They did sign a big corner, but it was not Paulson Adebo. It was obviously Nate Hobbs. I said the Packers 2021 draft class would be nuked. I was close. There was 4 remaining at the time. Stokes is gone. Myers is gone. Slayton is gone. But they did keep Isaiah McDuffie. So they do have that lone remaining member of the 2021 NFL draft. Zach Tom would sign a lucrative new contract and be one of the highest paid right tackles in football. That came to fruition. Neither Quay nor Devontae will get the full 5th-year option picked up half right. Quay did not. Devontae did. The Chicago Bears are your 87th consecutive offseason winners. That actually did, I think, come to fruition. I think they did kind of win the offseason. I said the Detroit Lions were going to be ultra aggressive. That was not the case. I thought they were going to make some sort of move like Green Bay did. They did not. And then I said Aaron Rodgers would be a Pittsburgh Steeler, and that ended up being correct as well. So not terrible, not great. But as far as bold predictions go, I'll take it.
I just remember last offseason we had like a flirting moment with Garrett. It might have been Crosby first and then Garrett when that trade request hit at the Super Bowl. And then I don't know, I guess there was a moment with Micah that didn't completely come out of nowhere because he was unhappy in Dallas and there was a contract. So what I remember about last offseason was Packers fans and voices like myself just moving from one guy to the next and just recycling the same kind of conversation over and over again. So
there's
it's
a
funny.
Trey Hendrickson one too. So
Yeah, that's the other one. So I was like, I wonder which pass rusher or edge rusher Andy focused on most, because I was trying to remember the timeline, and Max Crosby would have been just after Myles Garrett. I don't know when he signed his extension last year, but I it was more of a timeline thing because you knew one of those pass rushers was going to be in there.
Yeah, no, for sure. So overall, I'll take it. But let's get into 2026 bold offseason predictions. Jacob, since you are the guest of the moment today and filling in for Perry Goldstein, you get to go first. So, my friend, your first bold offseason prediction for our Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, when you pitch it like that, it's a significant downgrade. She's smarter and better at everything than I am, but I'll start. I don't know how bold this is, but we'll start on the shallow end before we start wading into the deep end. Not the unrestricted free agent class. So not like Chris Brooks and Emmanuel Wilson and guys like that, but none of those guys, Quay Walker, Rashid Walker, all the way down the line. I don't think any of those guys are coming back to Green Bay for the 2026 season. I think most of those guys are already kind of replaced internally. And or in Quay Walker's case specifically, might have played his way out of one of those contracts between, I think it was Pete Doherty, and Andy, you might remember this better than I do, but that had said during the year that he had asked Walker about his contract And he said they hadn't talked in like weeks or months or whatever. And that was in November, if memory serves, or something like that. Yeah. And the only thing that has me like with some pause on that is Gutekunst, when he's ever been like so openly, no, we want this guy, we're going to keep this guy, whatever. Usually they've kept that guy. But then you add that into Walker's comments after the Bears game, basically saying like, this is what this team has always done, even since before I've been here. Like, we blow games, we blow leads. That's not something you typically say if you're going to be sticking around. Maybe I'm making too much of those comments, but otherwise the rest of those guys, I don't know how many of them are really worth re-signing. Like, other than Malik Willis, like, that's the one that would probably walk out the door and I'd be like, man, that kind of stinks. We couldn't figure out a contract there. But I mean, you're not going to figure out a contract for a backup quarterback that's going to get paid like a starter. So I don't think any of those guys are going to be back.
I would say Rashid, Dobbs, and Malik are foregone conclusions. They're gone, gone. I can't see any of them coming back unless Grant has a bold prediction stating otherwise. Sean Ryan and Igbari and Coy Walker are the interesting ones. I could see all three of those coming down to dollars and cents in some way if any of them got cheap enough that Green Bay would consider it. But if I expect it to be a lucrative free agent market, it's not a good, you know, good or great free agent class. And for that reason, I could see them getting priced out of Green Bay. It wouldn't stun me if one is back, but out of Quay, Ryan, and Enigbare, I think it's more likely to be either Sean Ryan or Enigbare, and I don't feel great about any of them being back, to be honest.
I don't think they like Sean Ryan. Like, that's the other, I know that's like a popular, like, bring him back, let him play center. And like, I understand the sentiment because I've talked about it before, how you don't want to be installing a new center that's a rookie, most likely how that would work, right? A rookie in the middle of your offensive line in a year where you already have questions at left tackle, right guard, and kind of left guard. If even if Aaron Banks is back, is like the question with him is he any good? And right tackle, is Zach Tom healthy? But anytime Sean Ryan's been a starter, they've figured out a way to make him not a starter, whether that's rotating with John Runyon, rotating with Jordan Morgan this year. Yeah. And then eventually it was Anthony Belton. And I'm convinced if Jacob Monk, if they thought he was like good enough or whatever you want to call it, they would have had him play center instead of Sean Ryan as well. I can't picture them being like rotating this guy in and out. Ryan's even made comments about it, just kind of being like, yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, I'd like to settle into wherever it is I'm supposed to be, but you know, that's life in the NFL. I can't picture them giving him a John Runyon contract, three for $30 million or something like that. And that's like, even bad offensive linemen get contracts like that. I don't think Ryan's bad, but he's certainly not, you know, good enough to pay $10 million a season either to be to play out of position. Like, I mean, I think he was better at center than Elgton Jenkins was, which, Andy, you've talked about this a lot. That's not a high bar to clear for 2025. No. So I don't even know who I would say the most likely one to come back is out of those guys. Well, I guess it would be Quay, but I mean, we just kind of talked about that. And I don't think they'll put much interest in Enigbare just because pass rushers make a lot of money, and he's somebody who I think could even get into like that fourth round comp pick kind of range with some of the contracts he might get. So I don't think any of those guys are coming back.
Yeah. I like it. Grant, you next pick.
I guess I have a couple. I'll deliver my take that kind of builds off of Jacob's a little bit. I think they're paying some O-linemen.
Okay. So
they're paying one. Maybe that means Sean Ryan is returning, or they're bringing in somebody from the outside out of nowhere like they did with Banks last year. And I don't know how the dollars and cents works out. I'm a believer that most of these teams, if they really want to find a way to do something, they can find a way to do it. So I'd have to look at the cap breakdown. I just have a hard time believing with how poorly the offensive line played this year, that they are going to run it back next year with a first-time starter at left tackle, presumably in Jordan Morgan, a new center, a left guard who wasn't awesome, a right guard who's a second-year player. I'm not even sure if he's a right guard, and I think his performance is a little bit overrated. Oh, yeah, and by the way, your best lineman, Zach Tom, might not be healthy to start the year. I guess I have a really hard time seeing in a team that's supposed to be all in with the trades and the contracts that they made that Goody is just going to look at that group and say, that's fine, we'll just draft a couple guys and we'll be good. You know what I mean? So I don't think Sean Ryan is a stud. I think he's in a really unique situation where the team probably doesn't want to have to fix center or replace center on top of, you know, switching over a couple of spots they already are. And I think organizationally they were probably humbled a little bit this year. They've been getting away with a fourth rounder at left tackle and then a seventh rounder. And we'll just rotate here and we'll just shift. And for the most part, it had worked forever. So I don't even blame the Packers. I think this is the year where some of those chickens kind of came home to roost and they got caught. And I think this offseason, like, I wouldn't be shocked if they pay someone that we don't expect them to pay, or they might just draft, you know, they really throw some of their best picks at the position. I have a hard time thinking they're just going to throw rookies at this O-line and expect to fill in the cracks. That doesn't seem like something that they would do.
Never a fan of when the chickens come home to roost. Things never end well. Things never end well when they start roosting.
Which is weird, because that seems like it would be a good thing. Like, we have chickens in our farm and they're laying eggs for us and they're roosting. I don't know why that expression means something is bad, but I don't get it.
I'm sure we could look it up. I'm sure nobody cares, so we will not. But yeah, maybe somebody in the comments can hit us up and tell us exactly why it's a bad thing. But I digress. I'll piggyback off of sort of both of yours. Since they lose at least the majority, five probably, if not six, of their free agents, they do have the ability to go out and sign a player or two because they can only get four comp picks. So that gives them that flexibility. And then you mentioned you can't just go into the the season with the offensive line as is, with maybe a couple of rookies here or there. I'm gonna hedge a little here. I'm gonna say the Packers will either sign as their
cheating.
I know. I'll say one at the end. We'll either sign Monteric Brown, the corner from the Jacksonville Jaguars, or Cade Mays, the offensive lineman from the Carolina Panthers, the center from the Carolina Panthers. Both of these are 1A Packers types all the way around. Off their first contract, still young enough, both of them could be signed to that usual four-year deal that you like to sign them to. Both of them are on the upswing, very similar to what Aaron Banks was in San Fran, Nate Hobbs arguably in the Raiders, and then Za'Darius Smith, Preston Smith, etc., Xavier McKinney. We can go on and on, but all these players are in a very similar vein. You know, premium position, offensive line, maybe not center, but offensive line and corner. And like I said, I just think that they're both exactly what Green Bay is kind of looking for. I don't think they signed both, but I don't think it's completely out of the question. My initial one was going to be Monteric Brown, but I'm actually going to hedge now based on what you guys are saying. I'm going to go along with you. I'm going to say they signed Cade Mays as their one of their premium free agents, and they add him to their starting center. He also has versatility. He can play guard or center, which we know they love as well. But he's their starting center week one, and he's their big free agent signee. We'll be right back. So I remember the very first time that drinking hit me differently. I was drinking responsibly the night before, and we had young kids at the time, and I woke up with my son crying in bed and just didn't feel right. It was a very harsh reminder that after the age of 30, even responsibly drinking alcohol will make you feel less than 100% the next day. The more I looked into it, the more I realized that even a few alcoholic drinks will crush your sleep and your next day readiness. That's why I'm obsessed with Cheers Restore. Cheers Restore is a dual action after alcohol aid. Its ingredients support both your brain and your liver after consuming alcohol. Cheers was originally invented by a student at Princeton and was designed for how alcohol actually affects your body, not just dehydration. And you don't have to just take my word for it. Cheers has appeared on Shark Tank and is sold in over 30,000 stores, and they've already sold over 50 million doses. And Cheers is backed by doctors, PhDs, and over 1,000 verified clinicians who share it with their patients. Cheers' promise is simple. All you do is take three capsules after your last drink or before bed, and you'll feel about 50% better the next day or your money back. That's why it's same night out, way better morning with Cheers. For a limited time, our listeners are getting 20% off their entire order by using code PACKADAY at cheershealth.com. Just head to cheershealth.com and use code PACKADAY for 20% off. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that PACKADAY sent you.
I love it. As somebody who I think every show for the last 6 weeks, I've complained about them rotating offensive linemen. And I don't know, Andy, have you looked? Somebody told me the Cleveland Browns, and I have not looked at this to clarify it myself. But
everyone's a free agent, all five.
That's No. Okay. I mean, teams that rotate offensive linemen on a I remember, I think it was week two this year, they rotated Anthony Belton and Darian Kennard at right tackle. And I'm just like, just pick one. Like, any offensive lineman ever, you talk to Mike Wall, you talk to TJ Lang, you talk to anybody who's played that position even now, and they're just like, yeah, I kind of value knowing who's the person next to me. Like, I haven't seen another team who does this.
And this should be able to then sort of set it and forget it, I would think, at least to start, right? Jordan Morgan's your left tackle. Banks is your left guard. Mays is your center. Belton's your right guard. Tom's your right tackle. And if you want to have Jacob Monk learn three different positions, if you want to have Travis Glover learn four different positions, John Williams learn five different positions, Donovan Jennings learned five positions, Kennard, bring him back if you want, have him learn every position but center, fine, so be it. Let all of those guys learn every position that they need to learn. But 95% of the time this offseason, Morgan should be at left tackle. 100% of the time, Banks should be at left guard. Like 95% of the time, Belton should be at right guard. And 100% of the time, Zach Tom should be at right tackle. And if you go get a Cade Mays, 100% of the time, he should be at center. And just don't mess with it. You just don't need to at that point.
Nope.
This is why I said they maybe needed a little. I love the concept of an organizational humbling, right? Like, I remember when they upset the Chiefs in Jordan Love's first year as a starter? They're rotating. I can't remember what position it was. They're on Sunday Night Football.
Left tackle.
That's what I was going to say.
Blindside protector.
They were rotating blindside protector in that game, and it was working. So, like, I don't even fault the Packers for following some of these O-line principles because they've worked. I just think this was the year. Even though they invested a premium pick and a big time for they'd invested. It's not like they were trying to skate by that some of those principles stopped working. Can I ask a really quick follow-up on this Monteric Brown fella?
Yes, absolutely.
So he's the same age as Kingsley Enagbare. Tell me why that money or the money would be better spent on bringing in someone else rather than just retaining.
Enagbare. Well, Brown's a corner. Monteric Brown's a corner. Oh,
That's a quick answer then. Thank you. I might be looking at the wrong thing.
Nope, you're all good. That's the big thing. But I would just say Monteric Brown is better. That's the other one.
That's the other thing. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Sorry, I was looking at the wrong thing.
You are totally good, my friend. All right, let's snake it. I'm gonna do the next one, and then we'll go back to Grant, and then Jacob gets two, and we'll go from there. This is one that I've been toying with, and I'm like maybe only like 40% of the way of actually believing it. But this isn't predictions. This is bold predictions. So I'm going bold.
40 is a great number. That's very honest.
I'm 40% of the way in trying to convince myself of getting there, and I still don't know if that even would get me there. But I digress. Rashawn Gary will return to the Green Bay Packers in 2026. So, all right. I think Rashawn Gary should be gone. I think the most logical way that you get to free agency relief is by getting Elgton Jenkins and Rashawn Gary off the books. It feels like this is the most foregone conclusion along with Elgton of the offseason. So again, I'm only starting to convince myself of maybe it's not the case, but Here's why I think this could be the case. Number one, the Packers are weird. They have loyalty fetish issues. They love being loyal, sometimes to a fault. And it's happened with Nick Perry. It's happened with other players. Like Kevin King is another great example. When the fan base is done, it doesn't like, and we're like, why is this guy still on the team? Green Bay seems to double and triple down and be like, no, we love him. We're absolutely bringing him back. He wore the captaincy on his chest a season ago. He's beloved in the locker room. Players seem to like him. Obviously, again, for being voted team captain, the team seems to like him. They invested the early draft pick. They've invested the huge contract. The other thing, while I think this is a horrible way to look at it, you actually save more money in 2026 by restructuring him and doing a full restructure than you do by releasing him. And so I can see like the sort of wheels churning of, all right, do I want more money and Rashawn Gary on the team in 2026, or less money and no Rashawn Gary on the team in 2026. Now you pay for it later. So it's a really bad way of looking at it. And Green Bay generally doesn't look at things that way. They look at it in the long-term view, but you do save more money this way. I think this would also hinge upon a slight give back by Rashawn Gary, which is probably the breaking point. He's set to make in base salary this year. Give me 1 second. I had it up and of course I lost it. So Rashawn Gary's set to in base salary this year. That's not his total cap hit, but in base salary set to make 16 million. I think it is. It is 18 million. Sorry, 18 million. I think that would need to come down to probably at least like 14 million ish. Like, so he gives back $4 million in base salary this year. They then do a full max restructure and you get a very sizable contract renegotiation that saves a bunch of money this year. And he provides your third edge rusher once everyone's healthy. And here's the other thing. The other reason that I have pause here of them just releasing him outright, Kingsley's a free agent. And of course, Micah is coming off a torn ACL where he's probably out the first 4 weeks of the season and is probably not playing a full complement of snaps until what, week 9, week 10, maybe week 7. Right. So I think it should be a very easy decision to move on, but you start adding up all of these things, and especially the one where Green Bay is just bizarro loyal sometimes to players. My bold prediction, Rashawn Gary is back on the roster, wearing that number 52. No C on his chest this year, but he's back on the team in 2026.
I love how the take includes they revoke his C.
No C. He gets to stay.
He'll
go to Micah this year, would be my guess.
So I guess I don't disagree just based on, like, it's a practicality matter, right?
No, I need you to disagree. I need you to tell me I'm wrong so that this doesn't happen.
Well, I mean, he was bad. And he's going to make more money, and they would have to push that money down the road. So I guess the way that I can agree with you from a very dumbed down, kind of slightly different angle is who's playing defensive lineman when Micah is hurt and Enigbare's leaving? Like who's playing? You know, like I know they have other guys on the roster, but it kind of becomes a numbers game. So the way that you presented it as the cap number is lower next year and you still have Rashawn Gary, or the money's better and you still have Rashawn Gary, I can see it. And the Packers are loyal, so I guess I agree with more things that you said than I disagree with.
Here's Jacob, where I don't agree.
Let's go.
If YouTube came to you, Andy, and said, "We love what you're doing. We love everything about you. Take less money." I'm trying to practicalize this. Let me rephrase it that way.
I think that's the biggest hiccup in the entire thing.
If my job comes to me and says, "We love you. We want you to take." We want you to give back money that we agreed to give you at the beginning of this whole song and dance. Pay cuts are so rare. Like Aaron Jones took one year, and then the next year they asked him to take another one, and he told them to go scratch. Preston Smith took one under Gutekunst as well. I think that was after the 2020 season. He took one going into 2021, so after the COVID year, I think Preston took one. Other than that, I can't think of many instances where it's like you're asking a guy to give back money that you agreed to give him.
Let me ask you this. What do you think Rashawn Gary gets per year on the open market?
Yeah, that would be the question to give back to him.
I have a hard time thinking it's more than $14 million on a base salary per year. Maybe I'm wrong. And if it, and maybe then if it's like $16 million, maybe you even shave $2 million off. Like you would still have to prove to him, I think, in some way of like, hey, we're still giving you more to stay here or as much to stay here as that you would get on the open market. Cause if you don't agree, we're cutting you. Like that's where you do have the leverage to say, hey, if you don't agree to this, we're just flat releasing you. We're not going to have the conversation, but we want you here and we're willing to give you as much, or maybe even a slight bit more than you would get on the open market. And if that number's again, around $14 million, you can save $4 million. I'm just saying maybe.
Yeah. And the interesting part here is Gary's got his own agency. So he doesn't really like represent himself, but he kind of does.
Yeah.
And the counter that he could give is like, okay, I can get $12 million on the open market. You are insulting me by asking me to give money back. So for good feelings purposes, I can get $12 million plus incentives to get to that money. And I'm going to bet on myself and get that money anyways.
Fair.
And feel better about it because this team loves me and wants me. Gutekunst's comments at the end of the year talking about how like we'd love more production from, like, I know he had the numbers off the top of his head or whatever, but then he was like, they're gone. You know, I know pressure is product or disruption is production or whatever. I just kind of want to see like what constitutes a pressure for some of these places. Cause like if Rashawn Gary had 60 pressures last year, I mean, you guys watch every game just like I do. Can you remember a time since Minnesota when he knocked the ball out of McCarthy's hands that was intercepted by McDuffie, where you were like, oh, Gary almost got there. Like anything.
They're in the room with us right now, actually, all of them. I was over this conversation 3 years ago when it's like, well, but his pressures. And it's like, okay, sure. Also, can we all agree that most football fans aren't stupid? We know, like, everyone knows that sacks aren't the only thing. You know what right. I mean? It's not like the average football
nice thing. Fan. They're a very nice thing.
They're the one. I tell you what, sacks are going to be what put you in the Hall of Fame. They didn't put Lawrence Taylor in the Hall of Fame because he had a boatload of pressures.
But the thing is, like 3 years ago, the whole thing was, well, his pressures are great. The sacks will come. And they're not come. Like, and no, they've never came. They're not here. And they're not at this point. I'm done holding out hope that they're ever arriving. So,
and he looked less explosive than ever. Like there was a point like you. He looked almost, there's a time where he looked explosive where you're like, yeah, pressures probably will equate to sacks because he's so explosive and he just doesn't have that anymore. There's no closing burst to the quarterback whatsoever.
I'm going into the archives here for you, Andy, but I remember when you were tweeting about Nick Perry and talking about him as a guy who like just looked like he was out of ideas, out of explosion, out of a plan, had not, and the Packers ended up cutting him that offseason.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what sticks in my brain when I look at Rashawn Gary. And then you've got him. Listen, I don't do the whole effort thing, or at least I try not to, but when you're taking a stroll in the park at Soldier Field that are in a playoff, in a do or die playoff game, just kind of like, F it. I'm not going to catch the quarterback anyways. Meanwhile, Colby Wooden is busting his butt to get over to this guy. I don't know. For a guy who wears a C on the chest, that's one of the worst stories I wrote this season. Like, it aged horrifically. I wrote a story about him after week one. It was the first time he'd ever been elected a captain in his life, high school, college, whatever. This year was the first time he'd been elected a captain. And by the end of the year, like, it might as well have been the C on Zadarius Smith's chain. Like, it just doesn't mean anything.
Didn't matter, yeah.
Well, that's why Andy's going to take it away.
I'm emotional hedging is what I'm doing. Or at least if he's back, I can say, ha, I told you he was going to be back. No. I really don't think he should be, as I mentioned at the onset, but the Packers do weird things sometimes with this stuff. So that's the gist of my belief there. Grant, you're up next.
They're just not going to draft a corner until the very end again. Because okay. This is what we have them clocked, right? Like, how many times do we need to see this? And the last 2 years we've gone into the draft thinking, well, first round, I mean, it's corner. And then they don't. And then it's like, well, then they'll get it day two. And then they don't. And it's like, well, they'll hit it with a bunch of picks on day three. And then they'll snag someone in the seventh round. And they're fine running this group out. And you might think, well, Grant, but they have less depth than ever. And I feel like they haven't had depth the last couple of years. And Goody and his staff are just kind of okay to approach the corner position the way they have been. And to be fair to them, if their pass rushers remain healthy and Xavier McKinney catches a couple more picks, their corners were probably fine. Like, they were probably good. There were some bad moments, like Carrington Valentine getting stiff armed into the, you know, into Middle Earth, like, sure. Nixon having a bad quarter, sure. And we react strongly to those moments in time, but zoom out on balance over the course of the season. I think if the pass rush is healthy and the safeties are playing at a high level, like they should be, I think they're safe. Their corners were mostly good enough. So I think for the however many straight year here, we're going to go into the draft expecting them to finally handle corner and tackle corner. And I guess I'm not going to predict it, but I wouldn't be shocked at all. They don't, because they haven't. And I don't know why we would expect them to change their plan now.
Jacob, you're up next. I have a few corner ones I want to piggyback off of it. Do you have any corner ones that you want to piggyback off first?
No, just okay. Based off what Grant said, no.
I'll just piggyback off a couple like kind of lightning round ones. I said Keyshawn Nixon, Carrington Valentine, and Nate Hobbs will not all be on the roster in 2026. So don't know which one at this point. Hobbs is probably maybe the most likely, but not all of them will be back. At least one of them will not be on the 53 when the season opens. I also said that the Green Bay Packers will take a corner with their first pick in round two. So I'm disagreeing with Grant on this one. Their first pick in this draft, I just think there's a lot of really good corners right in that, you know, range where Green Bay's picking at 52. So I think they're going to be in a pretty good spot to take one right then and there. And then my last one is, I said, I think there is going to be a contract dispute between Keyshawn Nixon and the Packers, because Nixon was already talking contract in his end of season locker room availability. I think he's going to say, I've been a starter. You didn't, you know, when we initially signed that, I was kind of a mid-tier slot guy. Now I'm a legitimate starting corner. I have only got 1 year left of my deal. I want an extension. I want a raise. And like, Green Bay is going to be like, whoa, we don't want to do extension and or raise. And I think there'll be some sort of hold in or contract dispute between the Packers and Nixon.
I mean, I'm not on the Ross Uglum side of Keyshawn Nixon, but I don't love Keyshawn Nixon as much as Keyshawn Nixon loves Keyshawn Nixon. Like, I'm somewhere in the middle there, probably better than what some people think he is, not as good as what he thinks he is, which, I mean, that's kind of a requirement of that position, right? But yep. Like, he's one of those guys, it's easy to me. Like, you want to hold out, trade, cut, yeah, whatever. Like, I mean, that's not for the, this is a guy who's supposed to be a culture guy, all that kind of, like, one of his draws is supposed to be that, right? Like, I mean, I know it's modern football and everything, but like, culture guys don't hold out. Culture guys don't hold in, with the exception of, like, you know, Jordan Love, who was on the doorstep of getting $300 million or whatever it ended up being for him. That's a little bit different, right? But I guess just to piggyback on yours, I was wrong. I do have one. I don't think the Packers sign a cornerback in free agency. So I think all of their cornerback additions come via the draft. And I think Chris Johnson is the name that, like, everybody's throwing out now as, like, this underrated player. And then he's going to get picked at, like, 21, and we're going to be like, oh, so he wasn't even close to being able to be a Packer. But with Goody talking about wanting to improve the depth, I wouldn't be surprised if they took a second or third rounder as a guy who could, like, compete to start, I guess. But, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth, two guys on day three, and just saying improve the depth. And then next year they have, because all those guys, Hobbs is essentially on an expiring contract if he's back. And the other two guys are on expiring contracts. So it's like nobody from 26 will be on the team in 27 without a contract extension, right?
I don't necessarily agree with the Packers' approach to corner in the draft. I think corner, I think this is how the Packers view it. I don't really want to pay any corner an insane amount of money. I want to treat corner like a team should treat relief pitchers in baseball, where you want to have a good group of guys you like, and you try to get a good, reasonably priced player on a hot streak for 8 or 9 games at the right time. And they get hurt and they lose a step real quickly and they're streaky players. Like, I don't want them necessarily spending all of their first round picks and giving a ton of free agency money to corners, but they need to give themselves more breathing room. They just, like, they've taken this all the way down to the bone where they can't bench Carrington Valentine when he kind of, again, not quits, but, like, he had no interest in being out there against Baltimore, and they had no other healthy player to throw out there to replace him. Or if Keyshawn Nixon wants to act like a bonehead, like, they don't have any depth, and they don't have anyone pushing these guys. And that's what they need. I'm fine with Valentine and Nixon playing and starting as corners if the room is a little deeper and they've earned that, and it's, if there's depth and they've been pushed. And I just don't feel like that's been the situation at all. I know that's what they're trying to do with Hobbs, but it just didn't work. And I want young, cheap corners. I want a lot of them. That's the way I would do it.
Well, you talk about pitching. I look at it too as almost like, and I usually look at offensive line this way, but like, they're missing their ace in the corner room. If Nixon is your 2, okay. If, like, Hobbs is your 3, okay. If Valentine's your 4, awesome. And then if you get to, like, Kamal Haddon as your 5 and, like, Bo Melton or something as your 6, all right, now all 3 or all 5 of those, number 2 through 6, feel like they kind of fit their spots. I don't maybe still love Nixon as 2, but I can live with that. Or if you want to switch Hobbs and Nixon, whatever you want. But it feels like they're missing their ace in that rotation. And if they had that number 1 guy, everything else sort of clicks into place and you feel pretty good about it.
And I Freddie Peralta, if you're a Brewers fan, is a good example of a guy who was a number 1. I don't think he's an ace. Like, he's not Pat Surtain.
He's a good number 1.
But he's just solid. Like, I don't know that they even have that guy. There's too many. Yeah. There's too many inconsistencies with the two corners they have. And again, in a perfect world, and I think this was probably Goody's calculus, well, our pass rush will be the balls, and we got great safeties, and I love our linebackers, so it'll work. The problem is their pass rush got hurt, and they dropped interceptions. The safeties did, McKinney especially, which kind of trimmed their margins down. So again, I don't want them drafting or paying or acquiring like Pat Surtain, although that would, that'd be sweet. I don't think they need to do that. They just need a little bit more in that room, and that's a room they've been neglecting.
And with the guys they have, one of the issues with the cornerbacks specifically, none of them have ball skills. And like, if you're going to be as up and down as you are, I don't have a better example than this, so I'm sorry. I know he's an awful person, but it's like Darren Sharper. Like, Darren Sharper was going to give up a bunch of plays, but he was going to make a couple too. And Trevon Diggs let's use that example. That's a better one. But Trevon Diggs is a good example of, like, yes, he's going to give up some plays. I'm not saying the Packers need to bring Trevon Diggs back, but he's going to make a couple. And if you're going to give up plays, like every corner in the world is, you have to make a couple, especially in the Packers. There is no playmaking in that secondary if McKinney's not catching passes like he did a year ago, and then this year he didn't. So I think that they need an infusion in that room, certainly, like you mentioned. I think the thing you're talking about of moving those guys down a peg would be perfect. The problem is, starting pitchers that are number ones or relief pitchers that are Aroldis Chapman or whatever that have that, you know, $20 million price tag. Those guys just don't come available. So you're hoping that Monteric Brown or Paulson Adebo or, you know, some flyer that you're kind of taking and guessing on, for lack of a better term, in free agency becomes that guy. Or like you're hoping that rookie's ready to go right away. And the Packers, they don't play rookies. That's just kind of how they've done since LaFleur's gotten here. They don't play those guys.
Or you get an undrafted free agent in Sam Shields that can come in and start and play well for you right away. Something.
Yeah,
like
that would be nice too, wouldn't it? That was another thing about this cornerback situation all year that was weird. Even if you got the most optimistic outcome of Valentine, Hobbs, Nixon, and Bullard as those guys being the corners, because I don't know what they thought Bullard was going to do and everything with Hobbs and everything like that. But even the most optimistic outcome of those four guys, you're a rolled ankle away from
problems.
Who the hell was cornerback four coming into, you know, training camp? Kamal Haddon, God bless him, but Bo Melton, like, great story, but I don't think he played any defensive snap of significance during the year. Not one. So
just really quick on Chris Johnson too. I was talking to Justice about this. Johnson's probably in that spot where if he tests really well, he will be gone well before Green Bay takes him. And if he doesn't test really well, Green Bay will have no interest in taking him at pick 52. So it's almost like a no man's land. If it's going to be very difficult for Chris Johnson to be a Packer, because he either tests out of their range or he tests out of their liking him. It's one or the other. Let's move on from corner. Jacob, you've got another, so take it any direction you want. We'll be right back.
I do, and it's not going to be a popular one, but look at the contracts. Look at what the Packers did in the draft last year. The Green Bay Packers love extra draft capital. The Packers are going to trade Jaden Reed before the draft for a day two draft choice. Now, my thinking on this is, I don't think the Packers are going to be in the business of giving Jaden Reed a long-term contract. I think they're going to give one to Christian Watson. I think they're going to give one to Tucker Kraft.
Yep.
They drafted Matthew Golden, who is small. Jaden Reed is also small. More on that in a minute. They also drafted Savion Williams, who, whether you like him as a receiver or not, doesn't really matter. They probably do. So if they do, I won't be surprised if they add a guy in the third, fourth, fifth round this year either, as like some depth in the back of that room. And then Reed is going to be a guy who, you know, are you paying Jaden Reed a 3-year, $30 million contract extension a year? So he gets that Jameson Williams contract, or Khalil Shakir, if that's the number that he ends up landing on. I don't know if they're going to, and then that's just on offense, right? The guys I talked about are just on offense. After 26 and 27 upcoming years, Edgerrin Cooper, Javon Bullard, Evan Williams, Lucas Van Ness to a lesser extent, Devontae Wyatt to a lesser extent. Like, there are guys coming up that need contracts on that side of the ball as well. At some point, you have to start making some decisions that are tougher when you pay your quarterback a gazillion dollars and you pay Micah Parsons a gazillion dollars. Reed is small. He's been dinged a lot the last 2 years, and I don't think that's his fault. It's just smaller players tend to get hurt a little bit more. And I don't think the Packers are going to be in the business of giving him a long-term contract. So if you're not doing that, then it's probably prudent. Plus, you had that thing where they kind of downplayed it, but after they drafted Golden, he had to have a meeting to like reassert himself as the team's top receiver or whatever that whole thing was with Rosenhaus. Again, they downplayed it. Maybe it was nothing, but it was at least some conversation of something. And if LaFleur, like, everything we've seen with Matt LaFleur, Andy, Grant, do you really think he's going to commit to, for the foreseeable future, an 11 personnel of two small receivers of Golden and Reed on the field, with Christian Watson being the other one on the outside, and saying, yeah, forget run blocking?
No,
probably not. So if you're not going to do that, then I don't think they're paying a slot only receiver a boatload of money when they have a bunch of other guys they could pay. And to Green Bay's credit, as much as we've talked about what they've done at receiver, they're very good at finding players that can play. And someone, I love Jaden Reed. I think he's awesome. I think he's, you know, I'm excited to see an offense next year, if I'm wrong here, that has Watson, Golden, Reed, and Tucker Kraft on the field at the same time. But I just don't think that's something Green Bay is going to be in the business of for a long-term contract.
I floated a couple Jaden Reed trade scenarios out there this offseason. I wanted more veteran players, like guys who could come in and play right away if you're going to do it. I floated Keanu Benton from the Steelers to help fix your defensive tackle. I floated Jerrion Jones, the corner from the Jaguars, to help you at corner. I floated, you know, T'Vondre Sweat. I don't know if the Titans would really need, they don't really need a slot receiver, so that probably doesn't work quite as well. But if you could get a, you know, it's a little bit of robbing Peter to pay Paul, but if you could get somebody legitimate to come in and be a starting corner, starting defensive tackle, starting offensive lineman for that, I think they would really consider it. Because I do think if Jaden Reed is here, it's one and done, and then you're getting a comp pick for him next year.
Yeah, and it's like you said, almost like they talk about, Joel Sherman of the New York Post talks about all the time, like trading from a position of strength. In theory, Green Bay's position of strength, if you go into next year and still have Christian Watson, Matthew Golden, who you picked in the first round, Dontavian Wicks, who's had some nice moments, Musgrave can fill in at receiver with stuff like that. Savion Williams was a top 100 pick, and then Tucker Kraft, obviously. You feel better about that situation than you do at cornerback or defensive tackle. So the idea that you had was a good one. It was interesting to me to see just the responses, because what I did was, forget the player, but what I did was Green Bay sends Jaden Reed to Cincinnati for DJ Turner. And I don't think Cincinnati would do that because they have 1,000 receivers and they've paid them all, right? But again, a similar concept of trading a position that Green Bay could be okay with a position they really need. And the responses I got were, no, Jaden Reed's like guaranteed getting a long-term contract and all that stuff.
I don't think he is.
I don't think he is. And no, I agree. And him being injured for, if he had been the team's leading receiver again this year, like he has been his first 2 years since coming to Green Bay, then maybe that could be something that kind of changes that conversation. But he was hurt. He had labrum surgery after the Eagle game in the playoffs a couple of years ago. And then this year was, you know, had the foot injury before camp even started. And then the broken collarbone was honestly kind of a blessing for him, because then he could go on injured reserve and get his foot fixed instead of having to play injured for the majority of the season. And to his credit, when he came back, he was pretty good. But I also, Jacob Morley talks about this with me every week. Christian Watson has this reputation of somebody who has bad hands, right? The biggest drop of the season was right in Jaden Reed's hands. Like, he's a guy who has led the NFL in drop percentage, I believe, the last 2 years. Like, I'm not going to say he has bad hands, but
he has bad hands.
It's not great. Okay, Grant will say it then. It's not good. It's not good. So if he's not going to catch the ball, like, at the same time and be injured, I just think that Green Bay could be better served at, again, maybe like a pick for, or a player for a veteran, or for a draft choice that they don't have. And you've seen it. Receivers get overpaid on the open market, and they get overpaid for draft capital as well. So conservatively, he could fetch a second round pick. I think that's about as high as it would go, but who knows? Some team gets desperate and wants to give you pick number 30 for him. Then, you know, some team wants to make him their Jackson Smith and Jigba, by all means.
Yeah. No, it's the drops have definitely been an issue, and that was a huge one this past year, obviously, in the playoff game. Goes without saying. I do think it's an interesting concept. I love Jaden Reed too, just for the record, but I could easily see that being a situation, especially with Golden in hand already, where they do potentially look to swing him somewhere else. Let's go lightning round the rest of the way. Jacob, why don't you finish up anything that you have on your list, and then Grant, and then I'll finish up with mine.
Yeah, so on free agency, Green Bay will only sign players on the offensive or the defensive line. So that could be defensive ends, that could be defensive tackles. But I think they're going to go veteran, trench heavy, something like that. My other bold prediction that Jason Wilde will love, the Packers will sign an old player. So above the age of 30, that is not a line of demarcation. I think that was Goody's words, but I don't think it'll be someone like Calais Campbell, who's, you know, 40. But maybe I did a article a couple of weeks ago talking about like Joey Bosa or Khalil Mack or Hassan Reddick or someone like that as like a ring chaser who's in their mid 30s or something like that, and letting them be your
give me Kevin Zeitler. Give me Zeitler at guard.
Yes.
35. I don't care. He's still really good. And let him, you know what? Let him be a mentor for Belton for a year. He's probably like $5 million on a 1 year deal. Maybe it's $6 million, maybe it's $7 million, whatever. But let him be your starting right guard. Really, really good still. If he gets beat up, guess what? You've got Belton, but you have him mentor Belton for the year. That I would love that.
Yeah, and there's no rule that says the Packers have to start Anthony Belton. Like, the idea that his job is set in stone, I know we've all kind of talked about it, but no, it shouldn't be. Like, he was fine in some spots and really bad in some other ones. So that's one. Those are the big ones. The other one, I think the Packers draft a running back in the fourth round with their first pick on day three as like Marshawn Lloyd insurance slash replacement, and then Josh Jacobs replacement for 2027. I think this is Jacobs' last year. And unless they, if they adjust his contract to give him an extension or something like that, but it seems like this is it for number eight. So those are the ones I've got.
Kevin Zeitler, 14,409 snaps in his career, has never played less than basically 800 snaps. 799 was his fewest. Just a machine, just an absolute.
And you know,
machine.
He's hungry, right? He played in Cleveland for the last year, so he wants to win. And I think there's something that I'm not saying like this team is that Tennessee they want to win year. Less or Tennessee less. Excuse me, I'm sorry, but that bad. So, you know, something this team is missing is I think that Julius Peppers, Charles Woodson, Donald Driver, that I've been so close to the mountaintop, but I've never tasted it. And that was kind of like my ring chasing defensive end idea, but is like, can they get somebody to play for, so to speak, like the storylines that came out about them wanting to win one for Woodson or Driver or wanting to win one for Peppers, which they obviously didn't, but they could have. And players like that. I just think that's something that guys that have been through those battles, that when things start to go wrong, like they did in the wild card game against Chicago, it's like, no, we're good. Like I remember the Eagle Super Bowl, Saquon Barkley was like a big thing of like saying, stay here, stay level, you know, kind of stay where you're at. Bad call for the Chiefs in their favor, let it go. We score a big touchdown to go up 24-0, whatever, stay here. Just, I think Goody can say all he wants that he doesn't think that age matters when it comes to why they've collapsed. He and I disagree. I was the dumbest person I've ever known when I was 24 years old, and it didn't matter what experiences I've had. I still reacted to things like I was 24. There's a difference when you're 29, 30, 31 and reacting with that life experience to go with game experience. So that's something, someone like Zeitler, I hadn't even thought of. But I do think if they can add a center and then a Lucas Patrick-esque kind of interior swing guy, he could start at right guard. If Belton's not ready, he could sub in at center if your center gets hurt, whatever that is. But finding kind of that swing interior offensive line guy, and then
Austin Corbett would be somebody. Yeah,
that is a perfect. I remember that was a guy Green Bay was kind of, well, I don't know if they were linked to him necessarily, but we talked about him a lot in the pre-draft process.
Yeah,
Packers type. So I think those are, I think it's a trench heavy offseason, which is going to make a lot of people roll their eyes because it doesn't have the sex appeal as like picking a receiver in the first round last year. But Andy, you've harped on this for weeks. I'll harp on it until I have dirt tossed over top of me. But if you can't block and you can't tackle and you can't rush the passer with your front four, you're not winning anything. I don't care how many receivers and how great your quarterback is. It's not happening.
Agreed. Hi, Grant. Lightning round. Anything else you got?
I really like that age take, by the way, as you guys were talking about bringing in guys who were in their 30s. I'm like, we can't know for sure that some of their inconsistencies and some of their struggles the last 2 years is because they're a young team. But I think the case is there to be made. It's a lot of details, staying in the moment. And it's just like, man, maybe one or two veteran voices here and there, even if they're not playing large roles and playing all of the snaps at their respective position on either side of the ball. I think it matters. So I'm glad you hit that, Jacob. My take, I guess, is it's poorly organized, but I don't know if Desmond Ridder is going to be their backup quarterback moving forward, but I don't think he should be.
God, I hope not.
I hope not. This is something that I talked about on my show last week. Because the day was slow, there was nothing going on. And I just did like 45 minutes on how I think we underappreciated, not just how good Malik Willis was, but how important he was these last two seasons. Because when you hash it out, like the first year he was here, he was responsible for three wins. He started in the Colts and the Titans game. And then he came in relief in the Jags game, I believe when they were trailing. So it's three wins. And it's not to say that another backup couldn't have won those games, but it's like, those are three wins he was responsible for. And they were the seventh seed. You know what I mean? He comes in the Giants game in a big spot. Like if he throws a pick or fumbles there, like that game was in the balance. And then they finish this year with nine wins and they're in the seventh seed. So I'm loosely like saying, hey, if they don't have Malik Willis, they might miss the playoffs one of those 2 years. That's a huge difference. I am all in on let's go find another team's discarded quarterback who they drafted thinking they might be the guy because there's the blue chip traits there. We'll give him a sixth or a seventh, bring him in. That's our guy. I don't want to develop a pocket passer. I want a guy who can make three reads and then go.
Can I make a suggestion for you, Grant?
Please. Yes.
Justin Fields.
Love it. I think it's perfect. Yeah. And I think Fields, like we were talking about some other guys, like it's sports talk radio, right? So maybe the standard obviously on Pack-A-Day, this is, we don't entertain all of these silly conversations all the time, but we're like, what's Anthony Richardson up to? What's Will Levis up to? I think why Justin Fields is interesting to me is, like, he's had a couple cracks to start. I don't think a team is going to bang down his door to give him, certainly not whatever the Jets gave him, $30 million guaranteed. But by the way, bidding against no one, that goes to tell you how stupid the Jets are. It's like, no one even talks about how dumb that was. They just, you know, it's the Jets.
If the Pittsburgh Steelers don't want you, that's usually a pretty good sign.
Yeah. So he's been liked everywhere. I don't know that that was the case of Levis or Richardson. I think he can come in and fit into that role if he doesn't want to go to like the Niners or Kevin O'Connell. I think Justin Fields would make a world of sense, both in skill set and in personality and career trajectory. And I don't even bang the table. You know, Jordan Love gets hurt a lot. They need a backup. It's a long season. Like, everyone gets banged up. Everyone gets dinged up. I just think, especially now, you know, they go to 18 games at some point. I just think backup quarterback is really important. Just look at the last two seasons as evidence. So I hope they don't do Desmond Ridder. Nothing against the guy. I want a guy who can run. And I think the last 2 years is just, I can't give you any more clear evidence as to why that's important.
Can Justin Fields return kicks?
Maybe.
Try. Worth a try. Awesome,
right?
He can't be worse than some of the dudes they threw back there, right? Packers don't care who the hell their returners are anyways.
If he return kicks, I'm all in.
Didn't he do that in a preseason game for Pittsburgh? He did it
I feel like
they toyed around with it at some point.
You might be right.
His athleticism is his best skill set, though. And I think that you guys are right that has got to be like a requirement for your back. Because if your backup is playing, you need some variance. Like, you're not going to play with your structure, stand in the offense, deliver the ball. So you either need like somebody that can move around like that, or somebody to go on a Nick Foles run like he did when the Eagles won the Super Bowl. But like, that's happened literally one time. So you're asking for a lot to do something like that. So I like the skill set idea. That's where Justin Fields comes to mind. Anthony Richardson or Trey Lance is another popular name-ish as well, but I don't love that idea personally. But
same.
Here's to further hone the personality or the disposition standpoint. I don't think Justin Fields is going to come into Green Bay thinking, I'm only here because my last team porked me and the coach didn't like me. He might not have great feelings about the Jets, but he's had a guy who's had a couple of shakes now at four or five teams. My fear with a guy like Anthony Richardson or Will Levis is they roll into Green Bay and they're like, well, I'm only here because, you know, the last coach didn't like me. Or like, that sense of entitlement kind of had to be gone. That was gone from day one with Malik Willis. And I think that's probably a big reason why it worked so well. So I think that thing is important. And I think it fits in a way that makes sense with Justin Fields.
I like it. I got some last ones. I'll let you guys react and then we'll get out of here. I have four remaining. Marshawn Lloyd will make the 53-man roster healthy and will play in at least 8 games this season. I'm not saying more than 8. That's not even half the season, but he plays in at least 8 games this season. Carl Brooks will not make the opening 53-man roster. Malik Willis will get the largest per year contract of the offseason, setting Green Bay up with a 3rd-round pick. And Jonathan Gannon will keep the Packers in a 4-3 defense. Those are my four final lightning round bold ones.
There's a couple I hope you're right. Like the Marshawn Lloyd one, I think his skill set is what the offense is. Like, the offense, I don't think wants for much from a skill group.
Yeah.
That is something they're missing. Love Josh Jacobs. I love watching him. He's my style runner for sure. But he's not breaking one from 60. You know, that's something that Green Bay just doesn't have that threat. And God bless Emmanuel Wilson and Chris Brooks, but they're not doing it either. Carl Brooks was an interesting one. I toyed with that as like a draft weekend. Like, they draft a defensive tackle in the 3rd round or whatever, and then Brooks becomes trade bait on day 3 for a pick swap or something like that. I just didn't think that was bold enough, so I didn't want to toss that one in there. But I the last time he made a play was the blocked field goal against Chicago. I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit.
It was in a great year. It has not been a great couple of years for Carl Brooks. His best year was his rookie year by far.
Yeah, I remember coming out of that season thinking like he was going to be that secondary like sub package rusher, and just hasn't worked. The 4-3 thing, I hope you're right. I think most of, you know, it's kind of dismissed as like nickel is base, right? All the time. But the way you and Justice have talked about like roster construction and how all that stuff works, my worry with Bisaccia leaving, and I know Rich wasn't popular, but my worry with him leaving is that the next coach won't be, because Rich is a lot of things. A pushover is not one of them. So no. I think he would push for, no, this is my 5th linebacker. Go get him. This is my, you know, whatever. is they try and skirt on some of the special teamers that they've had and making like, I always concede that I don't know as much as an NFL general manager. That's why I don't have that job. I just play it on TV sometimes. I sincerely don't know what Brian Gutekunst has watched over the last 4 years to say they've gotten significantly better and they thought they've done, quote, really well. I know he's not going to say, no, we've sucked. It's not good enough or something like that. But you don't have to say that either. So
if,
I don't.
If that's your selling point to Ed Policy, though, you have to continue it when you're in front of the camera.
I suppose so. But you know what, Brian, if you're listening, the bare minimum that I am asking for is don't roster two kickers. If one is injured, put one on injured reserve. And two, if you're going to have 52 roster spots or 53 with two kickers, can you roster a damn returner?
But what's been the most absurd roster construction of the last two decades? Five tight ends. Three fullbacks or two kickers, three fullbacks or five tight ends on an active 53 man roster. Those are three of the most absurd things I've ever heard.
You know what? The three fullbacks team won a Super Bowl though. So maybe that's the problem.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. So I guess three fullbacks is that's gotta be the most absurd. The Brewers had
four catchers on their roster for a stretch in 2022. I always remember that as like, in the same realm, the same neighborhood is just kind of ridiculous.
Did one of them play? How? Like, I've seen three, but
they might have had the universal DH at the time. Severino was suspended, so they waited all season for him to come back. They had Narvaez, they had Caratini, and then there was one other, and I can't remember who it was, but it was like a week where just all of these situations lined up where they had four catchers on the roster.
They actually played all four of them behind home plate too. They only went with this is when you could still move defenders around. So, all right, it'll be interesting. I'm interested to see who has the best boldest predictions of the offseason. Let us know in the comments below who you think has the worst and or best takes. Worst is more fun to discuss, I'm sure. So you can roast us all in the comments. Jacob Grant, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
I don't want to close the show on a poor moment or whatever, but Rondale Moore passed away yesterday. So I've seen the, the same lines and stuff that have been bandied about of call this hotline, reach out to someone or whatever. Instead of passing the buck, Andy gave you my social media account, reach out to me. I'll listen to you. I've had to go through some of that stuff and I've been ignored. So I know how that feels too. I will listen. I will give you advice if you want it. If you just want to throw stuff at me, you can do that too. A little bit of kindness goes a long way. And that, 25 year old multimillionaire, the guy that should in theory be the happiest person in the world. And that's something to happen to. So everybody's going through that stuff. So not to end the show on a poor note,
no. But
that's something that I think that is important.
Listen, this is for everybody, men, women, everybody, period. Anyone that identifies other, 95% of the people that, per the demographics that listen to this show are male. And there does seem at times to be, I think it's gotten better, but there feels like, well, we have to be tough enough to not talk about our feelings or not seek help. Mental health is the most important thing. And so if anybody is struggling with it, again, reach out to any of us. We'll all be happy to talk to you. Even if you just need somebody to talk Packers to for 10, 15 minutes, doesn't even have to be you sharing your feelings. We're all open to that. I'm going to tell you, I'm sure Grant is as well, even though he didn't say it. But otherwise, again, there are options out there. Talk to somebody, please, because there's a lot. I know right now there's a lot going on in the world. Some good, some not so good, but it's not easy. So talk to somebody, be open to talking to somebody. And again, all three of us are there, even if you just need somebody to talk Packers to for 15 minutes. All right, friends. Jacob, where can we find all of your incredible work?
At Jacob Westendorf, Packers on SI. We're almost to the time of year where Bill Huber chains me in a room with nothing but a computer and a mock draft simulator. So we'll have a lot of those. And then the pre-order for the Green Bay Draft Guide dropped last week, I believe. So Jacob Morley, Ross Uglum, myself, features, 225 player profiles. And if there's a year where you need it, it's this year because the Packers don't have a first-round pick. And we talk about guys all the way down that list into, undrafted free agents and stuff like that and how they'll fit for Green Bay and everything like that. So looking forward to getting that stuff started and getting out of some rumors and stuff are coming this week. It's combine week. So not that any agent would ever tamper
Never.
With with a team. And we do not know that Billy Turner was approached at the combine by the Packers and they had a pretty good idea of what contract they wanted. That has not since been reported, but not that that would ever happen, but this could be a good week to hear some of that stuff for even guys just in Green Bay or guys potentially coming to Green Bay. So that'll be fun to follow too.
Big time. Grant, Wisco Sports Show. What else you got cooking?
Yes, sir. The radio show from 4 to 6 every night on a bunch of affiliates around Wisconsin, including within the last couple months, we added the Score in Appleton and Oshkosh. So if you're a Fox Valley, Fox Cities, up towards Green Bay person, otherwise you can always find the stream and all the links on my Twitter account at Wisco Grant. We're going to be at the Combine Tuesday through Thursday. So try to bring you, well, as much Packers content, obviously, as possible. Our Packers reporter, Mike Clemens, will be there, and our midday show with Bill and my evening drive show. But also, you know, whatever writers and analysts and guests we can drag over to our table. So this week should be especially fun for that.
Love it. Cannot wait for that. Go follow both of these fine gentlemen at Jacob Westendorf and, of course, at Wisco Grant. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL and the podcast at Packaday Podcast. We got you covered 365. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews as well. We'll see you guys right back here tomorrow, Monday. Members only Q&A, 3 p.m. Central Time. Tuesday is going to be a special Tuesday happy hour. 3 p.m. Central Time is the plan for that right now as well. So make sure to check out that also. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.